Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
But with the Big Ten back, the Pac-12 coming back, the time is now for You Better You Bet, like we did last college football season, like the hope will be every college football season moving forward, assuming that, God willing, that we're back in a normal, you know, time frame here. We're going to devote a lot more time to the college football here, starting with the opening segment here on a Wednesday. So Tyler and Bill, if you would kindly fire up that drum roll as we talk some CFB. It's just so great, isn't it?
Love it. Do you like the movie Drumline? Have we talked about
Never
this?
Saw it. Never saw it.
Love it. Great movie. Great. Like, love that movie. Random movie to love, but it's very rewatchable.
So, like, is, like, the plot good, or is it only good because of, like, the drumming in it? And if that, and by the way, that to me is an acceptable answer, that the movie's still good, even if the plot sucks, but the drumming's
it's,
cool.
It's good. The plot is acceptable, but it's really only good because of the drumming, and there is a shit ton of drumming.
Hey. And if you're a fan of college football, chances are you're a fan of that because the two are kind of synonymous with each other. All right, Kenny. So we've got a lot of games that we're going to get through here. All the top ranked teams and then the ranked versus ranked matchups as well here. And our number one of the show, Ken's big pick segment for college football coming up on Thursday. So if you're listening to this live, that'll be tomorrow. And if you're listening to it on Thursday, it'll be today.
Today.
All right. Let's start, Ken, as all things start with number one at the top of the board. The number one Clemson Tigers, a 46-point favorite over Syracuse with a total of 61.5. So Clemson's favored by 46 and the total is 61.5. So here's what I think is funny. Clemson's coming off a 66-point win last week. Like, this is video game shit. Syracuse has got like 60 players on the roster right now, and like half of them are freshmen. Just wanted to offer that context here. So one of the reasons, or a couple of reasons, why Clemson may be a near 50-point favorite in this game. What are you thinking here? Dabo and company, 46-point favorites over Dino Babers in Syracuse.
And just to take the spread and the total and like convert that into a score that people can kind of understand, the projected score in this game is 53-8. That is the projected, like, that is the, that's like, if you think it's different than that, then you could bet one way or the other, but like the average kind of like baseline score of the game is 53-8. Like, that is incredible. And like, not wrong at all. Anytime you have like a spread this big, one thing I like to kind of do is prepare some kind of historical context. Like, what, like, where does this, is this weird? Like, where does this fit into traditional, like, even any conference into spreads that we've seen before? So this surprised me. You know, Clemson's been favored by 35 or more 15 times in the last 7 years. Like, that is like an astonishing amount of games that play out exactly like this. And these games do play out differently. One thing you'll always hear about anybody who talks about a spread this big is they'll always say, okay, well, like, you know, is it too big because eventually, you know, Clemson's up 42-10, 49-10 in the third quarter, mid fourth quarter, pull all the starters, right? That's always what everybody talks about. Anytime Bama plays like an FCS team, okay, like that's got to be like a consideration here. And to be fair, the only other four times Clemson's by favored by this much was FCS teams, Citadel, Wofford, Furman, South Carolina State. So like, this is unprecedented in a conference game for Clemson to be favored by this much. Like, here's the problem. Like, they're still really good in these situations. Like, historically, this isn't like a fade Clemson spot. And if you think about it, it actually makes a lot of sense. One reason you would bet against a large favorite like this is when they pull the starters, what if there's like a large difference between the starters and the backups? What if you know, what if like running up the score was not, you know, of particular interest to the team? Like, what if they kind of like would call off the dogs, so to speak, which against FCS teams, teams like Alabama, teams like do that all the time, you know, favored by 50, 60. It's like, all right, cool. 49-0. We got it. I don't think any of that's in play in this game. Like, this is a conference game. Like,
can I read you a quote?
Sure.
Can I read you a quote?
Is it we're going to run up the score? Is that the quote?
Y'all, it's not that we're going to run up the score, but it's like, it's basically like that. I remember when Colin Wilson was on with us a couple weeks ago, and everyone should go back and listen to Colin's interview with us on Tuesday on the show, breaking down all the games, because Colin's awesome. And this is not to disagree with what Colin said. Remember, he was like, you know, Dabo likes to take the Lamborghini for a spin around the block and then park it. And like after like the game's already basically over, and then whatever happens happens because they've already won the game at that point. Well, it seems like, Ken, things are a little different this year for the Clemson Tigers. This is a quote from their offensive coordinator, Tony Elliott. We want to score every time we have the ball, like whether it's Trevor Lawrence and the starters, whether it's the backups that come in here. And we saw that manifest itself last week in the 66-point win over Georgia Tech, right? So I think this is kind of a different Clemson team where Clemson, like, it doesn't matter whether it's Trevor. It doesn't matter whether it's a second, the third, the fourth stringer. They're going pedal to the metal, foot to the throat here. So I think it's a great job by you bringing that up, because I don't think if Clemson jumps out to a 35-0 halftime lead, they're like, oh, well, they're going to take the foot off the gas in the second half. I actually don't think that's true.
I totally agree. There's sort of two big things with Clemson in a blowout that I think are really valid. So first of all, they cover, you know, with the same, you know, percentage or the same success rate that they do in small spread games. 35 or more, they're 8-7 against the spread under Dabo. So like, this isn't like some spot where every time they're favored by a lot, you back off. Their backups are light years better than Syracuse's entire team. And, you know, Trevor Lawrence's backup, DJ, and I'm going to completely butcher his last name, but he was the number one quarterback prospect last year. If you saw him coming against Miami, he's a complete monster. He's going to be an amazing quarterback for Clemson. Like, he comes in, like, there's a totally actually new dynamic. Like, he can run. He's very mobile, incredibly physical runner of the football, can also throw. They have their fourth, fifth, sixth wide receivers, like, incredible five-star guys. Like, the offense, when these guys come in, like, they'd be favored by like 35 against Syracuse. There's no like drop off. And oh, by the way, I think this is important too. If they choose to hand the ball off, and they have a couple of really highly recruited running backs behind Etienne, who I think, you know, can put up, he can, you know, we've heard he can name the score. Like, Etienne can name his rushing yard number in this game. Basically, Syracuse allows more than 250 rushing yards a game, and they played like Georgia Tech, like Liberty, Duke. Like, this is even in like run the clock out mode, Clemson scores on those possessions. Like, I don't understand. Like, I would never in my life bet Syracuse in this game. It's just like, do I want Clemson? And then is this like enough of a correlated parlay? Like, do I think Syracuse can score like 10, where there's actually like a pretty strong correlation between Clemson and the over, if your book will allow you to bet that? So what I mean is, if Clemson covers 45.5, they have to score at least 46 points in the game, the total 61. So, like, there are very few outcomes in which Clemson covers and the under comes in. Very, very, very few. So if your book allows you to parlay it, like, I think that might be worth it. Like, I don't know how Clemson doesn't score all the time in this game. And the backups are going to score. And Syracuse has scored single digit. Like, they scored 6 against North Carolina. What are they going to score against this team? Like, I again, like, it's a massive number, okay, but, like, that doesn't mean it's, like, the wrong side. I think that's, like, the interesting thing here.
You ready for this, Ken?
Okay.
Uiagalelei.
There we go. Uiagalelei.
DJ yep. Uiagalelei is the quarterback that Ken's referring to, the backup to Trevor Lawrence, who is better than probably, like, 75 to 80% of the quarterbacks already in Division One, or right, whatever the fuck they call,
like,
it
easily.
Now. Is it the FCS or the FBS? Like the main, like what we used to call Division One.
Division One is the FBS, and then 1AA is the FCS.
I feel like it always frustrates me because, like, when I go to look at scores, I always click on the wrong one, and it's like not what I was looking for. So I always,
right, you're thinking like
FBS.
FCS is Championship Series, and you would feel like, just from like the word championship, you'd feel like that's the good one, but it's not the good one. FBS.
It's one of those things that, like, I always, you'd think, like, in a coin flip scenario where, like, I click one, I would get it like close to 50. It's like 100% of the time I click on the wrong one every single time. And again, like, just to back up what Ken's saying here, it's, sure. So it's the not only could it be like the Clemson backups who are also great. And not only is Clemson going, like, pedal to the metal again, they're telling you that they're going to do that. This is not us speculating. They are literally saying this is what we are going to do. And there is evidence that this is what they have done already and will continue to do moving forward. Syracuse has no players. Like, opt-outs, COVID, 60 players, 30 are freshmen, and they're playing Clemson. Good luck, Syracuse. It's a lay it or don't play it for me, so I'm happy we arrived at the same conclusion with the number one team in the country, the Clemson Tigers. Perhaps, Kem, we've arrived at the same conclusion for the next game, which is, of course, the number two team in the country, which is Alabama after their win last week over Georgia. The Crimson Tide, 21.5-point favorites against Jeremy Pruitt in Tennessee, total 65.5. Thought it was very interesting when Colin Wilson was on with us talking about Saban's affinity for some of his former assistants, like Kirby Smart, and that Nick apparently has no love lost for Tennessee head coach Jeremy Pruitt, his former defensive coordinator. So interesting here with Tennessee. Jared Garantano sends the team to Garantano Bay when he's on offense. He may be benched in this game. The defensive line coach was just fired, and all they've got to do is take on Alabama. What could possibly go wrong?
Yeah, total of 66 in this game for a Tennessee game. That's pretty wild. Obviously, Alabama is doing a lot of the heavy lifting in that projection. One thing I like to do in all these kinds of situations with Clemson, I did too, what's unique about this game? Can I look up similar situations that are unique? So like, all right, Clemson's the unique thing in that game is they're favored by a billion, more than almost any team is ever favored by another FBS team. How do they do in those situations? How does Clemson do? What creates that kind of like situation? You kind of look up some stuff and get a feel for like how the spot might actually be affecting what the spread is in this game. Like, Nick Saban's always favored by this much in conference games. This is not new. Performs totally fine. Again, you set whatever threshold you set, favored by 17 or more, 21 or more, 24 or more conference games, like, covers, there is not a weakness in that, particular resume. One thing that I thought was really interesting, though, and I remembered this because it doesn't happen very often, Nick Saban does not play a lot of games which are, like, test games. And I would define a test game as favored by a touchdown or less. So Georgia was obviously a situation like that. You think about some of the LSU games historically. Now, some of them, they've been favored by like 21 points because LSU was terrible. But like a game that required a lot of effort and preparation to prepare for and then perform in.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
How do they do the week if they have to play right after that? You have to also remember Alabama notorious for easy scheduling in a normal season. Normally it's like, well, we'll play Georgia, but then we got like, we're idle. Then we got Georgia Southern and then we get ready
Wofford,
for the Iron Bowl or something like
the
that.
Citadel,
right, exactly.
Yeah.
Like everything is very carefully organized. Like obviously never play a road game ever. Even out of conference, it's like neutrals or they have to go to Alabama. Everything very carefully manicured. So that like there are these pockets to create preparation time for these games. So there's actually, since Nick Saban's been the coach of Alabama, I was like, okay, well, like when favored by a touchdown or less in a game, how do they do if they have to turn it around and play a week later? Like that's a rare situation. And you have to remember Nick Saban, his splits in all things like home, road, visitor, underdog, more than 14, more than 21. Like you can't find something he's bad at. It's impossible. Obviously he's like the best college coach of all time. When they've been favored by a touchdown or less, so a close game that requires a lot of preparation, and have to turn it around a week later, 3-6 against the spread in those games historically under Nick Saban. Like, I thought that was very interesting, and they're getting tossed terrible teams sometimes. So, like, one of the covers is Vanderbilt. Like, they got tossed Vanderbilt after, an LSU game. And I'm like, okay, and they were favored by 30 and won, 31-0. So I'm like, okay, even in some of the games, and they got tossed Mississippi State, a bad version of them, a couple times, any team that's like remotely challenging off the tough game, like really like very, very tough, like less than a possession, sometimes favored by 4 touchdowns or more. Like these have been kind of like slippery spots for Nick Saban historically, a guy who has no slippery spots, a guy who has no situation.
Why do you think that is?
I honestly think part of it is like one thing about the way Alabama prepares in the regular season is it's done like far in advance. Like Nick, like there are basically stories about like Nick Saban will play a team in the middle of the season and in the off season, he'll have like binders of work done on like that coach, wherever he used to coach in preparation for like a game 7 weeks later or 6 months later or whatever. Like the prep is done so far in advance. Like I think like Georgia required a lot of like
His life sounds like, miserable, man. What a miserable existence well, that
but
must
if
be.
He's happy. But maybe that makes him happy. Like, you know, our thing is doing a 4-hour radio show. That probably would make him miserable. He wants to prep for, you know, Jeremy Pruitt, Tennessee's offense. Okay, that might, you know, maybe that's something we wouldn't be particularly good at. If it makes him happy, hey, like, some people like to work a lot. So again, like, I'm not saying bet Tennessee just for that
unhappy
reason, just
people.
That, like, it's there's a little bit of, like, a weakness here where it's like, well, that's kind of interesting that when they play Auburn, LSU, well, Auburn, they always play the last game of the year, but when they play LSU, they play Georgia historically, Florida a couple times, like, the kind of the uber elite versions of these teams, like, they're it doesn't go great the next week. I think that's kind of interesting. I also think one other thing that's in play here, you know, Tennessee is not Vanderbilt. They're not like the teams that Alabama sometimes gets thrown off of this. Tennessee has a skill in this game, and it's their offensive line. They have four five-star recruits on their offensive line, including a transfer from Georgia, Cade Mays. Like, that's their thing. That's the thing they're supposed to be great at. Ole Miss was able to run the ball up and down the field on this team. Like, can Tennessee make this, again, I don't think Tennessee can win the game necessarily. Can they be competitive by running the ball in this game? I actually think the answer to that question is yes. So, like, Tennessee has a skill that I think gives them one, not all the advantages, one advantage in the game, but it's a good one. And you also get Alabama in this kind of a, like, I never like to, you know, just bet against Alabama blindly, whatever. I actually don't think this is a terrible spot to take Tennessee.
So, well, my angle after listening to what you said, would it be maybe like Tennessee first half, Alabama full game? So here's kind of my thought on how this goes. And let me ask, this is a yes or no question. Can Tennessee's defense slow down Mac Jones in this high-octane Alabama offense? Yes or no? Like, is Alabama going to score like a ton of points in this game?
Yes. I mean, yes, Alabama will score. Yes is the answer. The one-word answer,
so,
I guess.
So I think that, let's say that what you're saying is right, and Tennessee can kind of control the clock a little bit, maybe keep Mac Jones and company on the sideline, run the ball. At some points, they're going to have to score to keep pace with Alabama, right? Because, like, what if they have a drive and it stalls, they kick a field goal? We see, we talk about this in the NFL. If Alabama comes down and scores a touchdown, and then just snowball effect from there. And we've seen, you know, a lot of speculation that Garantano could be on a short leash this week. So he gets pulled out of the game, and now all of a sudden you've got the backup quarterback coming in against a Nick Saban coach defense. That's my concern with this game. So sure. What do you think, like, as opposed to Tennessee full game, maybe Tennessee first half with the assumption that they could maybe keep it close, kind of like they did against Georgia, different type of game stylistically, and then Alabama just kind of blows their doors off and they don't have the offensive firepower to keep it close in the second half.
Sure. I mean, yeah, it could play out that way. Like, maybe, like, split your bet in half and play Tennessee. Like, I have not, we're going to go through a bunch of games. I don't think I've bet any of these games yet, but, like, my initial thought on this game, is, like, some version of Tennessee in the game, whether that's, like, quarter, half, live, game. Like, I actually don't kind of like Alabama in this game at all, at this number.
Okay, fair enough. I think I'm going to play Tennessee first half after this conversation, and then maybe play Alabama second half, obviously, when the game starts on Saturday. But that is for Saturday, and for now, we move on to the number 3 team in the country. Coming off a win, but not an extremely impressive win. 12-7 over Louisville. That is the Notre Dame Fighting Irish. 10.5-point favorites visiting Pat Narduzzi and the Pitt Panthers. Total 43.5. So we know if there's one thing Pitt does well, it's stop the run. So I think that this game will kind of be incumbent on Ian Book to cover the spread for Notre Dame backers, and of course for Brian Kelly and Notre Dame to win the game as well. So how do we feel about this? Notre Dame 10.5 at Pitt.
I like Pitt a little bit, actually, and it kind of stinks. Like, we don't know. We have no update yet on Kenny Pickett, Pitt's quarterback, who did not play last week. They had a transfer, Joey Yellen, started and played okay, I guess. Miami has a really good defense, so it's kind of like I can't really shit on a guy for coming in and playing average against Miami's defense. The problem is Notre Dame's defense is also very good. So, like, if it's Yellen again, like, I don't know if I can take Pitt at this number. If Pickett plays, it probably goes down a little bit. There's, like, no news yet. It's so early in the week on, like, whether he's going to play or not. People thought he was going to tough it out last week, maybe. So, like, it just a lot of ambiguity on the Pitt side. But, like, from a stylistic matchup perspective, this is, like, a great situation for Pitt, honestly. They have the number one run defense in the country. Notre Dame can't throw the ball downfield very well. These two teams played 2 years ago. Notre Dame in the game came in with a great rush offense, had 38 carries for 80 yards in that game against Pat Narduzzi. 38 carries for 80 yards. Notre Dame won by 5. Ian Book threw a touchdown very late to win the game. Pitt was winning the game outright. Brian Kelly in these types of situations. Again, sort of like stylistically. So what kind of game is this, right? This isn't like the FCS blowout projection, like favored by like 35, 40, 45, 50. This is like, okay, like, you know, you're better, but you're not like FCS better than your competition.
So light years better.
I set the parameter at between 10 and 21 points. I thought that was pretty fair. Brian Kelly in those situations, 18 and 27 against the spread historically. And there are lots of examples of Notre Dame playing games like this and barely winning or losing outright is basically like the majority of them. It's not great. Now, the total in this game is also interesting, lends itself maybe to Pitt. There was an under move in this game down to 43.5, which is like an insanely low college total. There's expected to be wind and rain in this game right now in Pittsburgh on Saturday. That's always the early week weather moves are always usually pretty easy spotted. So I think that's part of it too. Like Pitt becomes a little more valuable if there's going to be literally no points in the game. Ton of wind last week in the Louisville game. That's part of the reason why the under was valuable in that game, ended 12-7. Stylistically, love Pitt in the game. Would much rather have Pickett playing after watching Yellen against Miami. But like, let's put it this way, kind of like with Clemson, like I never, ever, ever, ever want Syracuse in the game. Never want Notre Dame in this game. It's just, am I playing Pitt or not?
Yeah. So I that was kind of like my big thing in this game. And you kind of said it was Ian Book and the Notre Dame passing offense going to have to get the job done here. Cause I don't anticipate Notre Dame being able to control this game on the ground. And if I trust the Pat Narduzzi defense, you know, maybe you don't trust Narduzzi's decision-making and he's way too conservative, but he's a good defensive coach here. So my lean also was toward Pitt in this game, catching the 10.5. We'll see about Pickett as we move along this week. Can we move on to the number 5 team in the country? The number 4 team, Georgia, is idle. I can't imagine Ohio State will be only number 5 for very long. Ohio State, a 26.5 point favorite against Nebraska. Total 67.5. Total is high, but I think it makes sense given, you know, the offenses on both sides. Justin Fields back for Ohio State. Year 3 for Scott Frost as the Nebraska head coach. Year 26 for Adrian Martinez as Nebraska starting quarterback. In all seriousness, year 3. You would think at this point that Nebraska offense, that this should be the year that they're ready to explode. But man, like, I don't know, man. Wouldn't they have, like, kept games close last year if that were the case? I don't know. I kind of like Ohio State in the over here. What say you here, Ohio State against Nebraska? Ohio State nearly a 27-point favorite.
In the other games we just talked about, you know, I think one thing I like to kind of emphasize is I do handicap with spot and situation so much more in college football than I do in other sports. I just think there are actually, you know, predictive situations that are going to happen. When we have openers for Big Ten, those don't exist yet, obviously. Like, we have no idea what the teams are, and there's no spot. They haven't played a game yet. So, like, it makes it tougher to kind of land on what you like here. I thought Colin put it really well when we had him on. Like, Nebraska's just not ready for this. And, you know, like, they've had competitive games against other teams that were less elite than Ohio State. And they've had competitive games against, you know, worse teams than them where they ended up winning by a couple touchdowns. Like, they've had moments. But, like, I don't know if anybody in the Big Ten is ready for Ohio State this year. I really don't think it's Nebraska. And, like these teams, like, I mean, they play last year. And, like, you know, it's in Lincoln. There's a lot of hype for that primetime game. Is Nebraska kind of, like, back? We need to, like, you know, figure that out. That game closed 16.5 in Lincoln. So if you want to kind of compare, like, I think there was a strong home field advantage built in for that game. Now, like, who knows what we kind of have, you know, in Columbus or whatever. So maybe Ohio State getting a little bit more credit. Total was pretty similar, 64. Ohio State won that game 48-7, but, like, more important than the yardages and the sort of general statistics, they led 38-0 at halftime. Like, this was a take the foot off the gas game. They played them 3 times in the last 5 years. So you think about the Nebraska program growing up, right? So they make the move to Scott Frost, they get better and better, but, like, look how far they have to come. Last 3 meetings between these teams, 166-24 in the last 3 games combined. Like, it's just, I don't know if you, in one offseason, in one recruiting class, in one Scott Frost pep talk, like, you can make up, like, such an obviously large gap between the two programs. Like, I just, again, it's the same thing. Like, I want Ohio State, maybe. I never, ever want Nebraska. Are they mysterious enough in this year 3 and Martinez playing? Like, what are they going to be this year? That maybe you just pass the game? Probably. But, like, I really don't, again, like, sort of with one side here, I really don't think I want Nebraska.
What I would consider doing, and I don't know what the number is. I don't even know if it's up and I didn't look at it. But as you were talking, I was kind of thinking, maybe Nebraska can score enough to maybe keep this game like relatively close and cover the spread. Maybe they lose by like 24 or 21 or 17 or whatever. I think that's within the realm of possibility. If Adrian Martinez comes out and like this offense takes a step forward this year in year three of the Scott Frost regime, I kind of feel like Ohio State's going to score every time they have the ball though. So maybe I look at like Ohio State team total in this game and just go over there, eliminate the over for the game, like in case Nebraska can't score and it's like a game similar to last year, like 41-17, something like that. Like that, and the game goes under the total. I feel good about Ohio State scoring a million points in this game, though. So maybe that's what my look would be the Ohio State team total over. Again, Ken's college football picks coming up on Thursday, and I'll give my thoughts as well, any picks that I've got on Thursday and Friday's edition of the show. Ken, let's move on to some of these ranked matchups, top 25 teams playing each other here. And I have just checked the calendar. Today is Wednesday, October 21st in the year of our Lord, 2020. And that means... we still got 10 days left in Brocktober. Iowa State and Oklahoma State in Stillwater. Oklahoma State number 6, Iowa State number 7. It's so bizarre still. Like some of these other teams we're going to get to. Like Cincinnati is the ninth ranked team in the country. This is so fucked right now without like all the teams playing. Oklahoma State is ranked 6th. Iowa State is ranked 17th. Oklahoma State a 3.5-point favorite. Total 52.5. And Iowa State, Ken, has looked very good after the season opening loss to Louisiana, including a win in a game that you had and cast the Stinktown parlay with over the Oklahoma Sooners. We do want to add Oklahoma State's defense has actually looked pretty good by like Oklahoma State general standards defensively and also just in the Big 12 in general here. So what do you make of this game here in Brocktober with Oklahoma State and Iowa State?
I'm really glad you brought up Oklahoma State's defense looking pretty good. Of all the games we're going to talk about, I will guarantee this is probably the only game. Actually, there's one other game we're going to talk about where I will guarantee you I will have a bet. And I love the over in this game more than anything we're going to talk about.
52.5.
Yeah, so 52.5. And the good news here is like I can tell you what's shaping the total. Like it's the defensive metrics for Oklahoma State. It's some of Iowa State's performances. Like I get why the total is that. There's just a lot of reasons to believe that this is like a tremendous pivot point for Oklahoma State to change what they're going to be the rest of the season. So here's the thing with Oklahoma State, like play Tulsa, West Virginia, and Kansas. Like, first of all, like a series of teams that would not lend themselves to shootouts. So if you were going to pick two teams in the Big 12 that you were going to play against where you would not predict high scoring, you would pick Kansas State for sure, but the other two teams you would pick would be Kansas and West Virginia because like, you don't have to score a lot to beat Kansas. Kansas generally doesn't play high scoring games anyway. They can't score. They want to run the ball and they won't be able to do that anymore because their best running back is now off the team. And West Virginia kind of the same thing. Like they're not up there with, you know, the Texases and the Oklahomas and the teams playing with tempo. So like the opponents they're playing, they're making the defense look a little better. And I really think there's kind of an opportunity here for the offense to actually get a lot better off of 3 weeks off because they were going to play Baylor and the game gets canceled. Like 3 weeks off, you have to remember like how much practice time did these teams get before we knew there was going to be a season. This is like having a second camp, basically. The other reason, you know, so you have time off, you have the opponents kind of like maybe kind of manipulating our opinion of the defense to make it seem better than it is. You also have Spencer Sanders, I think, is going to play in this game. He and Illingsworth, the guy who ended up replacing him when he got hurt, like Gundy was basically like, they might split snaps. Like, I don't know what I'm going to do yet. I think Sanders is going to be available. Like, that makes me like Oklahoma State's offense a little bit more in the game, too. Here's kind of the last thing. So you have a chance with the 3 weeks off, all of these kind of variables. Like, I think they you know, lend themselves to Oklahoma State scoring more than the projection. The other thing is the rivalry between the teams. So Mike Gundy and Matt Campbell have faced each other 4 times since Campbell moved over to Iowa State. First of all, very interesting. All 4 meetings have been decided by a touchdown or less. The underdog has actually covered all 4 times and won outright 3 times. Oklahoma State, actually, one of the 2 Brocktober losses ever was last year. Oak State was like plus 10,
those
I think,
bastards. And
ended up winning outright. Yeah, so, I mean, just, you know, if you're using Brocktober, like this is one of the things that pushes against that. But I think the key thing is, okay, so all the games have been very close. You know, the teams are obviously pretty evenly matched when they played between these two coaches. The scoring in these games has been astronomical, which kind of gives you an idea about, like, system. And, like, Gundy's brought in different offensive coordinators, but every time he's brought in a new guy, it's like, no, like, it's me, and you have to work with what I want to do. So, like, even though the coordinators are changing, like, I think there is some signal here. Combined points in those 4 games that they played against each other, 61, 90, 91, 69, nice. And we have a total of 52.5 in the market. So, like, all of these kind of extra things about the game, right? Like how the teams historically play, the opportunity with 3 weeks off for Oklahoma State to play differently than how they played so far, their opponents not lending themselves to high scoring games. Like these all create, like they create the number in the market. So that's like correct in a way. But I think, honestly, I think this game will blast over that number.
I had no thought on this game until you started talking, and now I feel like I love this overall, so and I'm going to bet it probably during
the I don't know how it can be lower. Like, it's almost like a buy. I talked about this with an – I forget which NFL game it was. Like, I think it might have been Eagles-Giants, like a buy low on points, right? Like, we talk about teams being a buy low spot. Like, well, they can't be any worse than this. Like, the number can't be lower. How could this total ever be this – like, this is the lowest a game between these two teams could ever be totaled, ever. Like, a Big 12 game with Oak State involved, and it's 50? Like what? Like what? Like what? What world is this? So it seems like a buy low spot on points in general.
I'm Alex Rodriguez,
and I'm Jason Kelly
from Bloomberg. This is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Absolutely love it. So that's Oklahoma State and Iowa State. Let's go to the Big Ten. The little brown jug will be at stake Saturday night in Minnesota, where P.J. Fleck and the Gophers, the number 21 ranked team in the country, welcome in Jim Harbaugh and his new starting quarterback, Joe Milton, and the Michigan Wolverines. Michigan, a 3.5-point favorite, total 54.5. It's not just Milton. New wide receivers for this Michigan Wolverines offense, 4 new offensive linemen for this Michigan Wolverines offense, Tanner Morgan and Rashad Bateman returning for the Minnesota Golden Gophers offense here. So I said it to Colin Wilson yesterday on Tuesday's edition of the show. My initial lean is towards Minnesota. I think I like Minnesota here, Ken, and I think I kind of like this under as well because I really like this Michigan defense. Michigan's defense under Harbaugh is always going to be good, right? And now with all the new pieces coming in for the Michigan Wolverines on offense as well, maybe it takes them a little while to get going. I think Colin advocated for the first half under. I think that's worth a look too. I think the full game under, I kind of like that as well here, and Minnesota. So I actually have some strong feelings on this game. How do you feel about this one, Michigan and Minnesota?
Well, it's funny, you have really strong feelings on this, and this is the game I would say that the I've thought about it the most, probably, of the games we've talked about, and it has confused me the most, and I'll kind of explain what I mean by that. So, first of all, I think you have a lot of question marks, huge mysteries that come into this game. Michigan, basically, of all the teams that are, you know, are actually playing football this year, basically has the worst returning production in all of college football. Offense and defensive side and aggregate, like, just nobody back anywhere. On any side of the ball, you mentioned new quarterback, new, they're like open tryouts for wide receivers, like no committed starters. We're just going to, like, whoever looks the best, that's who we're going to play. That gives you an idea of how little they're returning. I mean, you would never do that if you had, you know, Peoples-Jones and Tarik Black still there and those guys. Nico Collins, who ended up not coming back to the program because he's going to go pro. He's going to get ready for the NFL draft and the combine. Like, so much needs to be replaced. So in game one, how can you ever go to bat with Michigan in this game? Like, it's an entirely new team. Like, what? And they're favored. Like, what could you ever count on here kind of historically to tell you that this is going to be a team that you would want to back or not just at least wait on to see how the quarterback looks, to see how the new team looks? At the same time, the interesting thing with Minnesota in this game, like, Minnesota is a program historically that would that never gets this much credit against this type of team. This kind of shows you, like, where P.J. Fleck is brought. They literally have,
as I say, Fleck, a great coach, man. That's the thing, man. Yes. It's like, and I know that this is not, like, breaking news here, but, like, as you were kind of talking about it, I'm like, Fleck's fucking awesome. Like, he's a great fucking – we saw that at Central Michigan, rowing the boat. Minnesota just plus 3.5 at home against Michigan in the opener here.
Yeah, last 15 years, I think, they've been underdogs in Big Ten games 80% of the time, something like that, last 15 years. So, like, they are not a team historically that gets credit against anybody, and they just basically come off the best season they had in about 100 years. I think, like, literally since, like, 1909 or something was, like, the last time Minnesota had a season as good as what they had last year. You lose a lot on defense, but, I mean, you mentioned Morgan and Bateman and those guys. How about all 5 offensive linemen and some of their backups back? And, that, you know, it's just like, you have that against a defense that literally returns no one. Like, on the surface, I'm like, okay, I think I like Minnesota in this game, except that, like, how, like, this, we talked about buy low, or, like, what's the lowest this number could possibly be? Like, historically, this number is wild that Michigan would get so little credit against Minnesota. It's almost like, is this the lowest this number would like ever be between these two teams? Like, that makes me a little nervous. Like, Minnesota is getting, they're getting more credit than literally they've ever gotten in the history of their program. I think they were like 3-dog against Wisconsin at the end of last year, 3.5 against Iowa. But we like knew that that was the best team they've ever had. Like, this isn't like that. They lost a lot on
defense. I get what you're saying, but like, I feel like, and it's an overused cliche, but like, there kind of is a new sheriff in town though. And like Minnesota's got the, unless, look, I don't know, Tyler really likes Milton, the quarterback for Michigan. Like, we haven't seen it. So I would say you give a quarterback advantage to Minnesota. Minnesota's playing at home. Maybe you would say if it's Harbaugh against some slap, okay, Michigan's got the big coaching advantage, but Fleck's a great coach too. So like, I kind of understand why the line is what it is, given like all the new pieces for Michigan. And as you detailed, Ken, a lot of the continuity returning for Minnesota. So that's kind of, and look, this is not me like saying like you're wrong or anything. It's just me being like, I don't think it's a case of like, this is the lowest like it could ever be in this spot. I actually think this is kind of like, I kind of think the line makes sense here.
Yeah, I mean, Michigan's still getting credit because they're Michigan. That's kind of what we're both saying, basically. And I'm saying like they should, because what happens in a lot of these matchups is it's like, yeah, it's a new team. But again, this isn't like Alabama or Clemson, but like, yeah, you know, like the next guys are usually as good as the guys who left. It's just, you know, like it literally in game one with this little returning production, like I don't think Michigan is a play on in this situation at all. It's just kind of like one thing with Fleck, and I just want to bring this up because I agree with you that he's a very good coach. My issue is like the guys who leap a lot. So Matt Rhule is like this. So like Bill Temple, you know, has the best season he can have with them, leaves immediately. Goes to Baylor, has the best season he could have with them, possibly leaves immediately. Like, there's two different types of really good coaches. There's the guys who can go in and, like, build it up, and then they get the better job. And there's the guys who's, like, 10 years, 12 years, like, really get a team up to, like, contender status or, like, build something really unique in a program. Like, Fleck had the best season in Western Michigan history and then left immediately. And the program immediately, like, the next year it was a little, you know, it was a lot worse, but it was like, you know, still an 8-win team, I think. And then got a lot worse. Like, can he follow up the best season ever? Like, is that the bar, or was that like kind of what he's done at previous stops? And like, now he's in new territory. Like, how do you follow up the really good season? He hasn't done that yet. He didn't do that at Western Michigan. So I think that's kind of interesting. Like, you know, there's a realistic chance Minnesota actually takes a pretty big step backwards here.
And I like the under. The under would be my play in this game. You got another, anything on the total?
I don't know how Michigan's, I mean, I again, total question marks for Michigan everywhere. So with total question marks, it's like, and it's not like we loved the offensive philosophy anyway when Shea Patterson was there. So like, if that's true, then like,
and he was also brutal.
Anything is in play here. Like Michigan could get shut out in this game, and I'd be like, well, I didn't have anybody back, and it's like maybe like it's kind of like Andy Dalton on Monday night. Like, what are we gonna see? We have no idea. And then 5 minutes in, you're like, oh. Like, I mean, we could be watching 8 minutes to play in the first quarter. Minnesota's up 7-0. And you're like, this is a problem. Like, I think Michigan stinks. Like, you could be saying that in the first quarter of this game, or you could be saying this quarterback's incredible. Like, again, total mysteries on the Michigan side. We don't know.
By the way, we will probably end up moving, hashtag it move, to a little later in the show for our live audience here. We got two more college games we want to hit, then we'll take a break, and Evan Silva's going to join us, talk NFL week 7. So let's get through these next two college games, and if we have a couple minutes left over, then we'll end up doing it moved here. We've got North Carolina loses to Florida State. They're still number 14 in the country. North Carolina, 15.5-point favorite over 23rd-ranked NC State. Total 61.5. North Carolina, so this is what I think is interesting here. North Carolina's allowed 76 points in their last two games, including the 31 last week against Florida State. Had the like nice second half comeback, but were unable to complete the comeback. They lose to Mike Norvell and Florida State. NC State's offenses look really good, averaging 34 points per game. What do you make of this one here? Carolina, more than a 2-touchdown favorite against in-state rivals, the Wolfpack.
I mean, you know, ACC games have been really good to us so far this year, and with a sort of a common philosophy in play, I will not have as many ACC bets this week because of how some of the matchups shake out. This is one where I will have a bet, and it'll be on NC State. And this is very straightforward. Like a historical angle, specifically in the ACC, but when we get to some of the Big 12 games, ones we haven't talked about, we talk about Texas and Oklahoma, who we didn't talk about because they're not ranked and are playing meaningful games this weekend. And we'll talk about those when I do my picks tomorrow. We'll have a pick in both of those games, Oklahoma, TCU, and Texas plays Baylor at home. One thing about how these conferences work is like, I think, you know, you have so few games even for the market or other better, like whoever, however you want to put it, so few games for us to figure out who is good and who is not and by how much. So we tend to overreact to like the first couple games of conference play. Oh, this must be how it is. This team must be really good and the other team must stink. As opposed to the idea that like within any given week, like, you know, teams for 2 to 3 weeks at a time will play better. 2 to 3 weeks will play worse. Depending on the opponent, that could change really wildly. Like giving a team too much credit early in conference play or even in the middle of conference play, game three, game four, can be especially dangerous. We always want to play those teams back toward the middle, right? And I think North Carolina kind of fits this profile to a T where it's like, okay, like they're basically like, they're kind of showing you who they are, right? And it's like, okay, like they, you know, Florida State gets a really, really big win. North Carolina's allowed all these points. Like they're still getting a lot of credit because of how we felt about them earlier in the year, or they look really good like the first couple weeks.
Well,
basically,
it's like Mac Brown and Sam Howell,
yes,
and
exactly.
Like NC State had no hype coming into the year. North Carolina,
right,
conversely, had a lot of hype coming into the year. Like it's fucking
right,
like Troy Williams and the basketball team.
Right. Yeah. Imagine playing a game like they just played last week, and like residual credit. I mean, still being they're good. I mean, we talked about this with Virginia to death the last 3 weeks, where it's like, lose. Nah, like they're still good. Favor them by 7. Lose outright. Nah, like favor them by 3. Like, no, lose by 10 to Wake Forest. Like, we were on them the whole way. And like, that wasn't easy. Like, it was definitely going to happen. But those were easy bets. They weren't necessarily winners. Like, those are easy bets. And like, I think betting against North Carolina in these spots is really easy. Like, just getting
a trash
ton of
defense against
a
good offense, yeah, man. Like, the line's too big, right? Like,
right,
what do you think the line should be in this game? Like, 9.5, maybe? Maybe, is that even aggressive?
Yeah, like, my number was 10. And like, I'm willing to consider maybe 10.5. But like, it starts to get to a certain point where it's like, again, like teams are showing you who they are. So like the trend that I'll quote here, which I think just kind of encapsulates what we're talking about, is like, okay, like a team is showing you they're not very good and then are favored the next week in conference play. Like, what do you do with those teams? So in the ACC, the thing you do is you always fade them. So last 5 years, teams that are on a winning streak, teams that are on a losing streak, rather, of even like one game, lost their last game, losing streak of 2, losing streak of 3. Again, like just a team that isn't playing well, a team on a losing streak in ACC conference play that is then favored. So again, like you toss Clemson out of this because they literally never fucking lose a conference game. So they're never going to apply here. But like every other team basically applies. Every other team has stumbles in conference play. But when they're telling you, showing you they're not playing very well, playing on that team that lost and is then favored the next week in the ACC, last 5 years, 33-56 against the spread, 37%. So again, like they're showing you. Like, they're showing you that you're bad, and the market is the one being resistant. The market's the one, still really good. Like, I swear they should still be this much of a favorite. And at least in ACC play, this is true in Big 12 play for the most part, too. Like, no. Like, they're telling you they're bad. Just listen. Like, just listen to them saying they're bad. Like, you can solve the puzzle. Like, who lost? Like, oh, they're probably not as good. And, like, you know, it takes the market some time, I think, to catch up to that. So I do like NC State in the game.
Are you impressed with the fact that I was able to come up with the number of 9.5 and you were like, yeah, I make it 10. That was just me being fucking brilliant.
who even needs to make numbers? I apparently off the top of our head,
you just fucking come to my brain and there you have it. I looked at this number and then like I did some work on the game and I did some research for the game and like I was trying to think like, how is the number this big? And I was hoping that you were going to be like, I love NC State also, because I was like, I love NC
preseason
State for sure.
Expectations for North Carolina. That's how it's big.
But you know what blows up preseason expectations when you lose to Florida State?
What blows up preseason expectations? Actual fucking football. Like, how about that?
Games.
That's all these friends play into that. How about just watch the fucking games and then make decisions?
This would be the Cowboys being like 7 over Washington on Sunday. Like, it's like, because the preseason, it's like, enough.
Yeah. Okay. Win total of 10, man. They're coming back.
We gotta be quick on this game. Yeah. So we want to spend a lot of time with Evan Silva here. Yep. Number 16 SMU laying 2.5 at home against number 9 Cincinnati again. Like SMU and Cincinnati in the top 16. Total 56.5. I kinda like SMU and Shane Bouchel and company here. What do you like here, SMU and Cincy?
My handicap of this game is I literally think it is impossible to come up with the right number. Like, I think wild outcome. Like, if you told me SMU won this game by 500, like, I would actually be like, that's impossible. If you said they won by 30 points, I'd be like, okay. And if you said Cincinnati won outright by 3 touchdowns, I'd be like, okay. Like, Cincinnati has played an FCS team, Army, which tells you nothing. It's like playing soccer as opposed to football. And then played South Florida, who's miserable, and they won easily. So, like, what have we learned? Again, we talk about the games as opposed to preseason expectations. What have we learned about Cincinnati so far this season? Like, they're 3-0. Obviously, they're not getting a ton of credit. SMU's favored in the game. But, like, I don't think we know anything about Cincinnati. So
I do like Luke Fickell. I'll say that. I do like Luke Fickell. I think he's a really good coach.
Sure. And I mean, you know, they've had good luck with quarterback play and quarterback health as he's kept coaching, which kind of meant he kind of got, you know, a little more accolades and they actually had some success because they were kind of underachieving there earlier in his tenure. But like, so they've gotten to a point where they're playing well. It's just literally, I think the crazy outcomes, and especially the way SMU scores against everybody, like, I think the wacky outcomes are possible. So like, you like SMU in the game, like, what's -9.5, like 3-1? Like, I might take that. Like, you like Cincy in the game, like, what's them -3? Like, +250? Like, again, like, I would play, like, I don't think we have a clue what the right, if the right number, like, if, you know, in an NFL game in week 12, I think we have a really good idea what the difference between the teams is, right? Like, one team's favored by 3.5. Like, okay, we all kind of agree that's, like, the right number. The number in the market right now is basically a field goal. Like, to me, like, I honestly think that's the market being like, well, SMU's, like, home, like, looked a little better. Like, sure, question mark. Like, I just, there's no clue. So if the number is, like, unstable, basically, and it's, there's no way that's the true number, we just have no idea what it should be, then, like, I think crazy outcomes become more likely. So whoever you do like in this game, like, I'd play it, like, heavily one way, heavily the other, like, create some kind of big payoff prices, because there's probably a higher likelihood they happen than the market thinks.
I feel like it was like 50 years ago that Shane Buechele was the quarterback for Charlie Strong's Texas team that up to beat Notre Dame on that Sunday night game, like, to start the season. Sure. Like, he's this guy's still, this guy's still the quarterback in college. Like, Shane Buechele's got to be like my age, and he's fucking still playing quarterback in college football. I kind of like SMU a little bit, but like, you sure. know, what the fuck? It's fucking
you can,
SMU.
You can like
Cincinnati.
Them. You could like anything in this game. That's the good news. You could like, you literally could. There's a justification for all bets in this game because Cincinnati has basically not played a game so far.